Good afternoon, I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Culture, current events, our Catholic faith. Earth Day, right? Today is Earth Day, which a good day for conservatives, right? Because that's what we used to call the stewardship of the earth, conservation, right? We want to be conservative in our use of natural resources. Somehow that's all gotten twisted around and it's a different world now. We're going to talk a little bit about Catholic social justice and what that means when it comes to stewardship of creation, and especially when we understand the human ecology part of that equation, certainly that is addressed extensively from Pope Francis and Laudato Si. So we're going to talk a little bit about that later on. Also in our first couple of segments, Rabia Ahmed. She is with the Muslim Public Affairs Council. She joins us on a monthly basis, talking a little bit about what the Muslim faith community is doing to certainly address radicalization. That's an important topic. And just what it means to be a minority in the majority. We've been there as Catholics, right? More to come. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Back after this.
Redbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit BreadboxMedia.com.
Good afternoon, we're back. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Culture, current events, our Catholic faith. That's what we talk about every afternoon. And once a month, we are joined by Rabia Ahmed of the Muslim Public Affairs Council. Yo.
I'm good. Thank you, Leo. How are you?
Terrific. Thank you. You know, the last time we talked, and I think that we kind of hit upon this and then we ran out of time, if I remember correctly, but even if we talked extensively, I don't think we can talk enough about this, Rabia, and I would hope that you would agree that there's work being done within the Muslim community that no one knows about, right? It's not sensational. It doesn't sell the headlines. It doesn't increase the ratings for the cable news shows. And that is this proactivity, certainly, that you're doing with the Public Affairs Council. But I would say that there's probably just an awareness within the Muslim community. And that is this this anti-radicalization approach. Tell us about that.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. Well, I mean, since I would say pretty much in the aftermath of 9/11, the concern of extremists or people from our community being attracted to extremist ideology has been a growing concern. And so at first, I would say American Muslims were very resistant to even acknowledge that this is an issue because they felt that by doing so that they were responsible for it. And by and large, 99% of the billion of Muslims across the world do not deal with extremist ideology or extremism in any way. It's not part of the reality. But the small minority that do commit acts of terror or are extremists, they have such an impact on the rest of us that it's something that we cannot address or try to deal with, so that that minority of people don't shape the way our religion and our community are perceived by the rest of the world. And so I think shortly after the Boston bombings, my organization, the Muslim Public Affairs Council, after a year of research and consulting experts, produced a document called Safe Spaces. And what it is that it's essentially a framework for our communities, our community mosques, to implement in their local communities. And what it tries to do is that it tries to educate people on how a person walks down the path of radicalization, what are things to look out for, and what are things to do to prevent it, as well as to intervene if you are concerned about a person who you think might be on a troubled path. We felt like we had to be responsible without being responsible for the problem. Mm-hmm. And that's been really like a good part of the work that we do, is to deal with the experts in the space as well as bring awareness to our community about this issue.
Rabia Ahmed with us this afternoon of the Muslim Public Affairs Council, and talking about this proactivity, which I think, and we know, I mean, I said it a moment ago, the reason why we don't hear this is because it, this would calm us all down. Right.
Yeah.
I mean,
the ones
who are fearful, and we know that's out there. Unfortunately, the fear factor would be assuaged if they're like, oh, wow, there's the vast majority of Muslims are peaceful individuals. And not only that, but they have measures to look for radicalization and try to root it out. That would be a beautiful message. But again, we can't get the talking heads just to crank the ratings on that. So it's unfortunate that this isn't being heard. But Robbie, that every time there is the unfortunate occurrence, whether it's on U.S. soil or, and unfortunately, it's also if it's on Western soil, and we know this. So it can happen in the Middle East, it can happen in Africa, and nobody cares. No eye is batted, unfortunately.
Right.
But when it happens in a Westernized area, then the outcry is, where are the Muslims speaking out against this? We've talked about this before, but there are always Muslim leaders who speak out against this, and we don't hear it. It's just not, it seems like there's a they're not allowed to have a voice in the Western media.
Right. I mean, and we're at a huge disadvantage. We make up a very small minority of the larger American population.
Sure.
So just by numbers, in fact, we just don't have the access to every, Americans of other faith backgrounds or no faith background. And so anyone who does a Google search and types in Muslim condemnations will see that there's been thousands, of various condemnations by scholars here as well as scholars overseas. And I think that we really do need to move the conversation beyond just condemnation, because condemnation is said so that people are made aware of where we stand on this issue. And I think that, at 15 years after 9/11, with all the condemnations that have been made, that, that needs to be accepted, that the majority of American Muslims or Muslims worldwide, do not condone terrorism. It is clearly outside of our faith, and it would be clearly outside of any world religion's faith or any, any person of any value or moral compass's faith. I mean, violence is not something that any sane person would ever condone. And so for our community, we want to move the conversation beyond just these condemnations, but actually let's all come to the table and work on trying to come up with a solution. The challenge that we face, as a community, even with Safe Spaces, our own program, is that the people that commit these acts of terror or walk down the extremist path aren't at all active in the mosques. And research actually shows is that the more engaged you are in your mosque, the more integrated you are into society in general. Like, you're more civically engaged, you're more, engaged in interfaith relations, and, you're more part of your community. And so the extremists are not coming through the mosques. they're actually isolated people who retreat and hide away from the community so that they don't aren't detected. And those are the people that are very hard to, you know, to detect, because they're not coming to the mosque. They're not openly discussing these things. The radicalization is happening either online, you know, with like various, you know, on Twitter and, you know, social media and ISIS social, you know, their
propaganda
and the propaganda, you know, in the forums, or it's happening, you know, through these lone wolves who are kind of being self-radicalized and are isolated and do not interact with Muslims. So that's a challenge we have, is that, yes, we have these programs and, you know, and that should be there so that, you know, that there is something in place, God forbid, if, you know, it is needed. But it still doesn't address the need of being able to, or the challenge of being able to detect these lone wolves that exist. So,
Rabia Ahmed with us this afternoon of the Muslim Public Affairs Council. You know, and the one thing I've said repeatedly is that if there were enough individuals who really had this kind of bend against Westernization, you could have done something already, right? I mean, look at the example, as tragic as it is, but the Hutu and the Tutsi, I think that those were the two tribes of Rwanda in the 90s, where it was mass murder because somebody decided to take action. And these were small numbers of groups, really, that banded together with machete and killed their opposing tribe. And, you know, a mass scale of something of this nature, if it was true, Rabia, if it was true that every Muslim wanted this, right, it would happen. You could do it. You could band together. You could do it. History has proven that things of this nature could happen. And why we don't see that as Westerners, why we don't see that this is so completely isolated, so completely in the, I mean, you said 99%, it's of Muslims are peace-loving individuals. I would say it's greater. I would challenge even that. I would say it's 99.999. You know, I would say that it's such a tiny sliver of this radicalization. Granted, it gets the headlines and it gets the attention, but it is not the Muslim community. And it's just so unfortunate. You know, I've even had you on when I've sat in on the news talk station, and we've got a completely different audience there. Mm-hmm. But I just hear that fear, and I hear that animosity that's there, that for some reason we, and when I say we, the media, have given such disservice to certainly the American Muslim community, but I would say the global Muslim community, because of the ways that we've portrayed this. And it's tragic, and it's very unfortunate.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I appreciate your thoughts and your sentiments and your support in that. If people, you know, we really need to encourage people to put things into perspective, and not just consume the images and the stories that, you know, that the news gives them. The nature of the news is to report conflict. And unfortunately, it's not done in any type of in-depth manner. It's usually projecting people as victims or people in conflict without discussing, you know, the larger picture, the larger perspective, or the people who are actually working on solutions toward that problem. I think the news would be very less depressing if they did take a deeper look into these issues. We really are at a big disadvantage as a community. We don't have access to, you know, Hollywood, you know, portrayals and pop culture are still very stereotypical.
Rabia, we're going to pick it up there when we come back. We're getting close to the break here. We're going to come back in just a moment. Rabia Ahmed with us this afternoon of the Muslim Public Affairs Council. We're in just a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, back after this.
Breadbox Media invites you to Bless the Yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit breadboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Culture, Current Events, our Catholic faith. We talk about that every afternoon for 50 minutes. And once a month, we're joined by Rabia Ahmed of the Muslim Public Affairs Council. Welcome back, Rabia.
Thank you for having me.
Before the break there, we were talking about the portrayal, and you mentioned Hollywood, which, my goodness, you know, we get into entertainment. I think we share, Robbie, I think Catholics and Muslims probably share a very similar, a slanderous position when it comes to media, entertainment media, Hollywood. Neither of us are treated very well, but you're mentioning how, unfortunately, this has led to the anti-Muslim sentiment. So I want you to pick up on that.
Sure. I mean, when research shows that, I think, 4 out of 10 Americans know a Muslim, that's a vast majority that still don't. And when Americans report that they really, despite, you know, being exposed to Islam in the last decade, they still don't feel like they know Islam or have positive feelings toward it because of the context in which it was introduced to them, we face really big challenges. That coupled with the fact that American Muslims generally didn't go into the fields of like law and journalism or the film industry. They tended to gravitate towards fields such as medicine or business and things like that. All these factors have really made it a challenge for us to share the real story of American Muslims and its diversity. And in Hollywood, you know, it's, again, in the news media, it's what bleeds is what leads. But with Hollywood, it's, you know, it's violence, it's all the sensational stories and, you know, the exaggerations and the stereotypical depictions that make money. And so we have these various barriers that we really do need to overcome to be able to just share like the reality of our community. We're not trying to do any type of PR campaign and make ourselves to be a community that's, you know, any different than it really is. But, you know, like every other American, you know, we're fathers and daughters and sons and mothers who are, you know, wanting a good education, who want a better life for our family, good health care and good, you know, a good job and a way to make a better life for ourselves. And I think that really gets lost in all of this polarized debates and, you know, contest these tense issues that we're always talked about.
And what about news outlets that are primarily Muslim? Al Jazeera, right? I mean, this is one that is out there that seems to be trying to set the record straight from a media standpoint. Is that helping at all? Or what do you think about those type of outlets?
Yeah, I mean, Al Jazeera is very useful. They do definitely bring in a different perspective, but I don't think like the majority of Americans watch Al Jazeera.
No.
Yeah, and so it's not reaching the audience. Yeah, it's not reaching the audience that, you know, that we really need to reach. We really do need to engage folks on talk radio or, you know, local media, like local newspapers and things like that. I think that's where the middle America is, and that's who we really need to reach out to.
So how is that working for you? Because I know that's kind of what you do with the Muslim Public Affairs Council. Are you able to get those platforms other than me? Are you out there? Are you out there in talk radio?
We are. Maybe not as much as we would like to. You know, we have our own limitation of resources, and, you know, we're dealing with so many different issues. But there are other Muslim organizations that, you know, are also engaged in the media, and you know, you might hear from them more often. But yeah, I mean, the more the better. The more that we can have these types of conversations, I think the better it will be for all of us.
So are there any platforms out there from the media where you would say, I mean, are there Muslim hosts of actual news programs or entertainment programs? Are we finding more integration that could potentially change a perspective, or are we just still not seeing that yet?
I mean, there's more. I mean, I remember when I went to journalism school, I went to UNC Chapel Hill. I was, I think, the only Muslim in both the undergrad and the graduate school. And this was in 2001 and 2002. But since then, I mean, I think because our community has seen the power of the media and, you know, the power of film, the power of storytelling in order to shape our own narrative, more and more youth are gravitating toward these films, these fields, I'm sorry. And, you know, with social media and with, you know, video production and digital content now being very popular, you know, the opportunities are definitely more. Are we where we need to be? No. But there is, you know, a growing trend that is there. And, you know, to be honest, while it would be wonderful to see, you know, Muslims on camera or, behind the camera, working on stories or covering the Muslim community in a more thoughtful manner, you really don't need to be Muslim to be able to have that sensitivity and awareness. Hmm. You know, there are organizations, for instance, Solutions Journalism is one partner that, you know, that I would like to acknowledge. They're an organization based out of New York. They don't work with advocacy groups, but the nature of their work, I think, is very important because they work with reporters to train them on how to be better reporters. Hmm. So, for instance, like if there's a hate crime that has that happens after a terrorist attack, which, you know, often happens when there's a backlash against the Muslim community, there is that tendency to cover that backlash. And Muslims are usually, when they're discussed in the news, they're usually portrayed either as the perpetrators of the attacks or as victims who are crying foul. Neither of those frames are very appealing or sympathetic, you know, that really brings sympathy toward the rest of the community. And so an example of a Solutions Journalism would be is that the reporter would report on the backlash, but they would also report on people who don't feel victimized or who refuse to be victimized, or people who are working toward a solution on the ground toward that. And so there are ways for reporters who don't happen to be Muslim to cover these things in a more sensitive, nuanced manner.
You know, in that you mentioned your journalism education, and Rabia, I went to not a journalism school necessarily, but a liberal arts school with a very good journalism program. And what we did, and we had such an ethic, and I value those days of this just being drilled into me at a very formative time in college, was that exactly what you're saying is there's always two sides. There's always at least two sides, right? There could be more.
Right.
And if we're really going to present a story in its integrity with all of its dynamics, we have to do the work to get those stories. And you also do it very ethically, right? You approach people with the understanding that they're being interviewed. You get the information that's needed based on that. All of these things that are just so above bar, which we do not see today, unfortunately. We see very surface at best reporting and very slanted, very biased. It's out there everywhere. And what an incredible time. You know, how beautiful would it be to see a TV news package that only has the 90 seconds it's got to get the story out, and then say, for the complete story, go to our website, and then bam, you got another 30 minutes of video, right? I mean, that would be amazing. We can do that this day and age, but who's doing it? You know, nobody's doing that.
Right. Yeah. No, I totally agree with you. I can't tell you how many times when I've been interviewed by folks, it's that they assume that I'm going to give them the cookie cutter response, and they'll ask me the question until, in a way that is supposed to solicit that type of reaction.
Of course, right? Yeah.
And I you know, when I try to push back on it in a very polite way, I'll get the same question worded in different ways.
Oh yeah, sure.
And so,
they want their answer. They want their slant. They're going to get their slant, yeah, whatever way they can, right? I mean, and that is, as you know, and unfortunately, many journalists don't. that's not responsible journalism and that's not ethical journalism. But my question is, and maybe these solution journalists, journalism guys, I want to look into them. Thanks for mentioning them. Maybe they're doing some really good work out there. But, you know, the path that I've discovered that many people become journalists is they've had some sort of beauty pageant in their past.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And they're attractive enough to get on TV, right? So then that's how their career begins. But we know that there's a high degree of ethics that comes from and responsibility, social responsibility that says I'm doing something that can change a perspective for the better. And if I'm not taking that responsibility seriously, I'm not doing my job. But unfortunately, we know that that doesn't translate to ratings and it doesn't translate to advertisers and it doesn't translate to money. And that's where the problems are, unfortunately.
Right. And, you know, we see this, I mean, not to bring this to politics, but we see this kind of the problem with this kind of surfacing in, like, the current election climate, like the political
right.
climate. Like, in order for a democracy to work, it has to have an informed public. But if that public isn't really informed or aware of the diverse perspectives or the realities of different communities, look how easy it is for them to be rallied in a certain direction. And
well, we're getting close. We're almost out of time. We got to end it right there. But Rabia, it's always great talking to you. MPAC.org is the website, MPAC.org, Muslim Public Affairs Council. Find out more stuff there. And your website looks great, by the way. You've got terrific stuff on there, and I appreciate what you're doing. So we'll talk again soon. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Kevin.
Back with more in just a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour.
Breadbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit breadboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. 50 minutes, culture, current events, our Catholic faith we get to spend every afternoon on this Earth Day, which, you know, is so ridiculously politicized. And I've heard those who are like, why we got this birthday thing anyway? It's just a bunch of liberal garbage. And which I hate if we say conservative garbage or liberal garbage, quite frankly. I think that those labels are unfortunate. And as soon as I hear that come out of someone's mouth, especially as a Catholic, either way, I think, wow, I wish you understood your faith better. And I don't say that as criticism necessarily as much as lament, right? I think there's a degree of just concern in me. My wife and I had this conversation this morning. And she's like, Leo, why do you just always push things the way you do? It just seems like you're intentionally trying to anger both sides against you. And I said, Mona, I am just trying to be Catholic. I'm just trying to express my faith in the way it was intended to be. Now, maybe I'm wrong. And if I'm wrong, God will set me straight eventually, I suppose. But the one thing I do know is that I know I have been wrong. I know I've been wrong. I know that I've been imbalanced. And I know that I had to get set straight from that, spiritually speaking. And so my prayer is that I live as balanced an example, a witness. I pray that my witness is as balanced as it possibly can be as a Catholic, because that's the beauty among many things. But that's one of the beautiful things that we can hold, is an incredible balance. And it's kind of like what, and I love this example when we were talking to Father Thomas Loya the other day, talking about this sine wave kind of model that says there's a median point at which that wave sways left and right. Now, if you get far enough back, it's going to look like a straight line anyway. But if you get, you know, if you only have a snippet of that and you're microscopic into it, it's going to look like, well, we have veered way off track over here. But the thing about it is, that's where the Catholic world is. It's a it's incredibly conservative looking. It's incredibly liberal looking at times. So some would say it's swaying way off that center point, depending on what the situation is. But because of this dynamism that is a part of what we have, as literally the tenets that we uphold, it is a straight line, right? It's the old God writes straight with crooked lines. Yes. Pull back on that, you can't distinguish left from right. You can't distinguish wave trough from wave peak. But if you are too close, literally, if you're examining this thing from a standpoint of saying, I'm going to nitpick this thing apart, well, guess what? Now you're going to say, well, that's way off over there. But unfortunately, what you're not going to see is that it's way off over there, right? Because you're going to have such a microscopic view that you're not going to get it. So I say all of this to say, yes, it's Earth Day, and as Catholics, we darn well better appreciate that because it's part of our faith. I posted over on my Facebook page a PDF, so you got to click on that and download it from the USCCB, but it's the Catholic Social Justice Teaching, affirmed and reaffirmed repeatedly on these issues of environmentalism, of stewardship of creation. And when you realize that this has been a part of our social justice teaching from the beginning, it's not something that the Second Vatican Council decided to create or some sort of hippie movement 50 years ago thought, you know, this is a good idea. Let's get out the guitars and sit around the campfire and sing Kumbaya and say, well, you know, we need to preserve this for future generations. That's not what it is. Again, we see, and this goes back to human dignity, which is paramount, right? So it's not, we can't equate it to that, but we can say that it's creation, and creation provides the ecosystem for humanity. And when you're in that world, now we're talking about a completely different deal, right? This is something that looks like a dynamic that has to be understood, that within that environment, there's an environment that says, this is where humanity dwells. So if we do value the dignity of each human creation for being unique and unrepeatable, as we understand, then we don't just want to afford the life of that unique and unrepeatable human creation. We want to provide an environment, an ecosystem that allows that human individual to flourish in the best way possible. That's why we have the importance of Catholic social justice teaching that says, you know what, there's stewardship of the earth, there's stewardship of creation that's vitally important to what we understand. So this is one that I find refreshing as a Catholic, because I came from almost a disposable earth mentality, right? As a Baptist growing up, and even as an evangelical, there really wasn't a lot of emphasis placed on this. And, you know, you got to understand that my college project for my broadcasting course, the thing that cinched my grade after months of working on this, was a environmental protection, recycling, PSA series of announcements that I put a lot of work into because it was a concern for me. And at that time, we didn't have rosies on every corner, right? It was, you know, that's how long ago it was. We were in this world of not even having that opportunity. If you wanted to recycle something, you had to make an effort. You had to take it somewhere and get it done. It wasn't like this was on your street corner where you could make it happen very easily. So it's always been an ethic of mine, and it's been something that I've kind of fought against even the inclinations around me, because there was not a support system, certainly not in my faith, not as a Baptist, not as an evangelical, even later on, as a young adult, that really said, good for you, Leo. Good that you have those ethics, because that's important to us as well. And it wasn't until I discovered this, and honestly, it was even after becoming Catholic and being Catholic for a while, that I found this teaching, as odd as that may sound. I don't remember, and granted, I didn't attend every session of my RCIA classes, just so you know. I don't know that anyone has 100% attendance records. Maybe they do. Certainly not me. And I can make every kind of excuse imaginable, but I was very busy in my career at the time, and I was probably out of bars. That is in the bar. Right? This is the beauty that says there's a reason why we kind of have those inklings that says, okay, maybe we need to protect this. Right. Maybe we need to find a way to do what we can to put an ethic here that says this is God's creation and we've got to do everything we can to preserve this. Not that this is some temporary home where we're just pilgrims on the journey. Yes, that is true. But it's our temporary home. Doesn't mean it's the next generation's temporary home. We don't know. We cannot say, well, this is all going to be gone soon enough, which was the attitude that I had growing up, right? That it's like, oh, who cares? Do whatever you want. And I grew up in the country. I was sharing this with a friend just a couple of days ago about how, you know, we had these dump sites and they were everywhere. They were, you found them in the country. If it was a hill where someone could dump something over, you would find things dumped over there. And it was a playground for us. Go into these dump sites, we find all kinds of crazy things. I developed a surround sound stereo system, if you want to call it that, a sound system that was surrounding my entire bedroom, built in shoeboxes when I was 8 years old, because I found speakers and radios and TVs that were dumped in the country, right? So it's just what we did. And we didn't think twice about it. It was like, got to get rid of it somewhere. Dump it over the hill. It's God, we as Catholics, we understand that there is something of value to our creation, and we've got to protect that. We've got to do what we can to protect it. So why not celebrate Earth Day? Why not have a little bit of a desire to go deeper and what that ecosystem is? Realize that as humans, we have to have an inhabitable place. We've got to realize that there's something about protection, conservation, being conservative, about resourcing, all of the above. These things are, they should be important. They need to be important. So don't just pick and choose and say, well, I'm going to go with those things in my Catholic faith that add up on my political leanings. You can find them, no matter which side of the fence you're on, you can find them. But that's not a holistic view of your faith. It's not a comprehensive view of your faith. And again, you're going to get microscopic on this thing, and it's going to look like the other side is way, way, way far away from you, as opposed to realize that we're both on the wave together with a very distinctive center point that's not wavering, and we're going to be on both sides of that political wave as Catholics. Pull back far enough, it's a straight line. It's undoubtedly a straight line. So hey, check out the document I put over there on my Facebook page, Leo C. Brown. You can follow me there. Maybe that might enlighten you. It's a lot of stuff, a lot of things in there that you can begin to take a look at. And hopefully, if this is something you haven't warmed to yet, maybe it's something you will if you explore it a little bit more. That's all the time we have for this. For listening, I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. God bless you.
Redbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.